Hey team, Grant Hagen back here for Built Different Season 4. Super exciting that we are back at it. Welcome into 2024. We hope you are as excited for this season to get started as we are. This has just always been really fun. One, I just wanted to say thank you for all the folks that have liked, engaged, commented, shared, all the fun stuff that we've been posting out there and just kind of our little bit of an off season here as the year gets started. It's just super encouraging to see how much some of these episodes and content and conversations that you guys have just been encouraged by. And so I just wanted to start by saying thank you. It's super fun to see all that. And even more exciting is what we have on the horizon for this season. We have just tried to brainstorm what ideas and how to make these conversations more and more impactful. And we have some really fun things we're going to try this season. I think anytime you get into, you know, one season, two season, three, being the fourth season, we have a lot of things that we're going to try to put in front of you guys this season. And what that looks like is going to be more field-based. So if you kind of recall back in season two, we really started to engage in a lot of conversations with just the tech person, call it VDC, call it technology manager, whatever kind of fits that boat. And then really last season was like, hey, how do we focus on some folks in kind of that exec level? Like how does the technology kind of persona or role interface with some of the exec folks? And as we were thinking about this season, we really thought, man, what could we do that would just continue the momentum and the awesome conversations that we've had? And our thought was, let's focus on the field. Let's get into the minds of some of the folks that are out there using these tools every day, either in positive ways or feeling overwhelmed by them. I think just the idea here and the theme that you're going to see throughout this season in season four is really just a field focus. And with that, we were thinking like, who is the best person to kind of engage in some of those conversations and dialogue and kind of host some of those things. And really the idea came around another team member that we have in Adam. And so I'm really excited to get to introduce you to him. Adam's going to be one of the co-hosts for this season. And what's exciting about it is, one, you'll get to hear from him in this kind of first episode of the season. And two, I think you're really going to be encouraged by how his background is going to play into where and how these conversations go. And so what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to bring in Adam and get to really introduce you to him. And really this first episode is going to be about him and his background to hopefully get you guys encouraged about some of the conversations that we're going to have. So Adam, man, really excited that you're here. I've been waiting to record this for so long. One, because I've selfishly got to enjoy spending a lot of time with you on the team here. But two, just to even like learn about your background. It's really cool anytime that I think all the work that we've done in maybe different parts of our career kind of get to be combined with other folks or be brought into different efforts. And so, man, just thank you for being open to co-hosting this season. It's going to be super fun. And yeah, man, I hope you're as excited as I am.
I am. We've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks, and you know, this will be my first foray into the podcasting world. So looking forward to kind of seeing how season four unfolds. Obviously, I've listened to the first three seasons and caught up with a lot of the great conversations that you guys, you and Brian, have had with a lot of the leaders in the construction industry, you know, innovation space. And, you know, there's tons and tons of value in a lot of those conversations. So excited to add my spin to conversations this season.
Come on, the flavor from the field. But I mean, man, with that, I'm just going to tee you up here for some things. One, I have definitely gotten to see and be a benefactor of your background and experience from the industry, but one, would love for you to share. I think as we were thinking about just how we wanted to frame out the episodes for this season, it was like, hey, let's get to intro Adam and like kind of talk about your background and kind of how that's played out before joining the Struction Site team, which eventually came on to the Drone Deploy team. And yeah, I really just kind of want to start there. Like, give us a little background of kind of your time and tenure out in the field, what your role was, what you did, how, and we'll get into some obviously specifics behind that. But yeah, well, I mean, let's just start with, hey, like, what were some of the projects you got to work on and what were some of the roles that you had on those jobs?
Yeah, for sure. Kind of just real basic background, grew up around the construction industry. My father's an architect, built an awesome career there. And so sort of entered my career choices with that kind of background and that love of buildings and design in particular. Went to college for construction management at Sacramento State, Northern California. Stingers up, let's go, go Hornets. And through a number of different avenues at college, I ended up getting an internship at Turner Construction in the Sacramento area when I was, my first year at Sac State. So over the course of my time with Turner, I spent roughly just under 13 years there, and got to work on a lot of cool, really cool see things, get to, you know, touch and influence a lot of different projects. So, my first sort of, my first role at Turner Construction actually as an intern, I got my foot in the door cause I had, I was just barely dangerous enough with a Revit model that I could spin it around and draw some walls, add some doors, those sorts of things. And, one of the PMs that was involved at the Sac State CM, program, he kind of said, "Hey, you know, we're looking for interns in the pre-construction department. Do you want to come on board?" So jumped in there, kind of became the one man VDC show in Turner, Sacramento back in 2009. Mm-hmm. And got to get my hands really, you know, dirty, not so much, you know, hands dirty, not so much boots dirty in that first role. But really learning a lot of the VDC tools that were, you know, emerging at that point in time. You know, we're talking 15, 16 years ago now. So there was a lot of new stuff that was on the horizon. So first couple of years with Turner, I spent in the office in the pre-construction department. I was a resource to all of the projects that we had going in the Central Valley, Northern California area, just trying to help those project teams leverage, you know, the basic tools like Navisworks and Synchro and stuff that they were wanting to leverage on their projects. From there, kind of, I told some executive leadership, I said, "Hey, you know, I got into construction because I like building stuff. And as much fun as all the VDC innovation thing is, I do want to go to the field." And so I got my first opportunity on some tiny little storefront remodels for Kaiser. There were these little insurance offices that were about 6 week turnaround time on two of them that they overlapped by 3 weeks. And so it was just a masterclass, like first feet to the fire, go be the superintendent, the project manager, and the engineer all at once in this very short, short period of time. And so that was a fun first little bit in the field. From there, I got my first big T job, and went out to the Stockton courthouse. Spent about two and a half years down there, roughly. And again, feet to the fire. Turner was trying out this kind of hybrid engineer superintendent role back then, and so I was the engineer and superintendent for all of the structural trades on that project. Mm. So everything from earth moving, you know, major excavation for the basement, piles, shoring, structural steel, metal deck, rebar, concrete, you name it. If it held that building up, it was on my plate. And so, tons of shop drawing learning, tons of scheduling practices, trying to get brushed up on. Got to experience a really cool project that ended up kind of shaping the skyline of Stockton, which oddly enough, close enough to home, originally from Lodi, California. So that was a good one too.
I can't help but notice the big T, little T. It was the little T, like small Turner jobs, and then the big T was like the big Turner job.
Yeah. So Turner has a special projects division, SPD. Mm. So it's special projects divisions that generally like TI projects, kind of smaller volume jobs, a lot faster turnaround times on those, smaller crews, smaller staff. But you know, just a different type of project. And then, you know, big T is kind of, you know, the mega jobs that everybody sees on LinkedIn and on the news and stuff, you know, the stadiums and hospitals and those sorts of things. So, my little Kaiser thing falls under sort of that SPD type flavor, and then going to Stockton and the rest of my crew is a little bit more, big Turner.
Nice. It's interesting to hear you. I've heard your story of your background, but maybe not in the context of like the VDC to the field side. I think oftentimes it's pretty common to hear folks coming from, well, I shouldn't say common, but just it's something you hear more of, maybe, of like folks coming from the field into the tech side. And walk me through like your interest. I mean, you made this note that was like, "Yeah, I came here to be a builder. Like, I want to go out and build." But obviously, you found some value in kind of getting involved in the tech. Like, what was that like? I mean, was that like well received of saying like, "Hey, I have this background, but hey, don't forget, like, I came here to build."
Yeah, that's a good question, and definitely something that, I don't know that I've even really fully thought about, and kind of like what the norm is and how you transition from one to the other. But I guess throughout my life, like growing up, like I've always been interested in tech and interested in just, you know, the cool new thing, the new gadgets and the new ways to do things. I think I also have sort of an inherent kind of mentality or I don't know, way of life, if you will, just trying to be better and more efficient at the jobs that I have. And so if there's a tool out there that will help me, you know, kind of be a little better at what it is I need to do every day, then I'm going to try and leverage it, at least explore it, figure out what the benefits, you know, the value is. And mm-hmm. So I applied that to my role in construction to start with, in the form of learning some of these new tools, right? And new, again, we're talking about 2008, 2009.
Yourself a little bit, but
yeah. At the time, you know, like VDC was, I don't even know if VDC was truly like a title back then. Like it was like, I was the BIM guy, right? Like mm-hmm. that was what my first boss, Steve Schultz at Turner, the pre-construction manager there, used to call me the BIM kid, right? And like, so, you know, before VDC really became a title, there were these tools that, you know, most of the industry didn't really even know about. You know, some of our project teams were like, you know, there was a lot of friction even in, you know, me talking to some of those teams internally and presenting to them, you know, some of those newer tools and ways that they could potentially gain efficiencies on their projects, visualize the data a different way, you know, just look at building things differently. And so it was kind of a nice, you know, personal way of life mixed with a professional opportunity. And again, an opportunity exactly what that was. There wasn't a whole lot of people in my seat that had those skills at that point in time. And so, you know, sit down, hammer them out and figure out how to apply it to the field.
You'll notice that we're going to do this quite a bit throughout the season. A question that popped up in my mind, totally off script here, but like, what do you feel like in 2008 was the perception of the field to some of these tech folks? And then what do you feel like the perception was from the tech folks to the field? Because like, it's interesting. I think obviously that perception's changed significantly in, what is that, quick math in my head, 15 years, right? Like, mm-hmm. what would you say when you started that perception was like, or at least your kind of perspective from it?
Yeah, that's a great question. In sort of the perception of the field by me and more of the innovation role at that point in time, I really looked at the field as a massive opportunity, right? Like that was the arena in which a Turner or any other construction that company, that's where they make the money, right? Like there's a saying in the industry, feed the field, right? At least, you know, a prominent saying at Turner when I was growing up is like, feed the field. Everything we do as an organization, whether it be operational, whether it be, you know, back of house, you know, general administration, those sorts of things, it's all geared to feed mm-hmm. the field, right? If we can finish jobs on time under budget, we make money, we hire more people, we win more jobs, we have a better reputation. So feed the field, like that was it. And so from my perspective, the tools that I was learning and the tools that I was, you know, kind of getting more familiar with and figuring out how to implement them in an operational perspective, I looked at that as the field was the opportunity to try and put some of those things out there and get those field folks to adopt and be better at their jobs. On the flip side, I think the perception of the innovation person, you know, in my role by the field, you know, I think it's come a long way in that, you know, quick math 15 years. But I think that it's very similar or still sort of an underlying feeling of, you know, if I'm the superintendent on a project, my number one charge is get this job built on time, under budget, efficiently, safely. And so, you know, wet behind the ears, college intern comes to the job site and says, hey, I have a new way for you to do your job. Yeah. You know, there's generally going to be some resistance there and some, you know, some apprehension possibly even. Mm-hmm. But I like to think, and I, you know, more than just like to think, I had some really good relationships with superintendents, project managers, project engineers through that period of time where, you know, I won a lot of people over from thinking mm-hmm. about things the way they had always built them and starting to think about new tools and new work, you know, new processes in their workflows and how to inject some of that efficiency and some of that innovation into their job. So I would say overall successful during that period of time, but definitely, you know, the glass was half full for some and half empty for others during that period of time. And I think that some of that still exists in the industry today.
You tease my next question, which we'll get to, I'm sure, once we kind of dive into some of our other topics. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you take a snapshot of, 10 years in construction may seem like a long time, but it's not very long. And to think back in 2008, like what perceptions were of office to field and field to office. We could camp out on that for a whole, conversation in itself, but it is interesting. It's like, hey, has that changed a lot? Has that not changed a lot? And I think, I don't know, would you say that you are encouraged or discouraged of how much you've seen it change over time? I mean, obviously, your role changed from, being more focused in the field and then coming, into a technology role here on the software side. But like from your perception, what do you see? Like, do you see a positive change? Do you feel like, I still think there's a lot of room to grow?
I definitely think that there's a ton of room to grow, right? Mm-hmm. But I will couple that with, overall massive positive change. I think that, again, we're talking about this period of 10 to 15 years, and you look at just the influence of a perfect tangible example is that when I first started, BIM services were like an add-on to a project, right? You had to budget for that. Mm-hmm. You look at projects nowadays, the majority of, kind of that, ENR list, if you will, of commercial construction, BIM services are just a thing that happens, right? Because we've recognized as an industry, as a general contracting industry, we've recognized that is by far, far and away worth the amount of time you're going to spend on it to make sure you can build the job more efficiently, make sure you meet your schedule and that sort of thing. So, in most cases, and I'm sure that there's a lot of anomalies out there, but like in most cases, that's just standard practice now for a lot of the contractors that we're talking to. So that's just one easy, tangible example of change over time that, has shifted in that positive direction for sure.
Yeah. One thing we've talked about too, like even last season, like how much that tangibly has changed by just like teams and job titles. Like imagine like you said, like, the BIM kid, right? Like back in 08, like, man, think of how many like teams and careers and departments have been made since 2008 and how much that has changed. And yeah, that's fascinating to think about too. And that for sure could be another topic in itself, but yeah,
I'll throw on top of that. Just to interject one more thing there too is, and if any of my Turner execs are listening to any of this, when I was a kid, right, again, that 2 years into that internship and realizing that I had the keys to tools that would make the job in the field better, that we weren't like vastly and widely training our people on, right? These were new things that hadn't made it into sort of that corporate training model yet. And so one of the things that I pitched at near the end of that internship and kind of as I had gotten more familiar with my role was like, hey, why aren't we cross-training all of our field staff on some of these tools that would make them better at their jobs, right? Yeah, sure. We're training engineers and superintendents on P6. That's great. But why aren't we training engineers and superintendents on Navisworks, for instance? It's like, let's empower them to jump into a model and be able to, spin it around, navigate, walk around the model and not get, fully lost and twisted out in space, make it something that they're familiar with and comfortable with so that it doesn't take a specialized, intern Adam to show up on the job to open the Navisworks model and get it into the hands of the people who would benefit. I put together this great PowerPoint slide that showed the career development of me being the person training all those people. And, it was a funny thing. So it's kind of, I modeled sort of today's innovation leaders, back in 2009.
Yeah. What's interesting too, is like, I mean, not to camp too long in the 15 year ago mentality, but like, I mean, iPads weren't really a thing 15 years ago. Right. So like, it's interesting how, I feel like we've talked about this maybe two seasons ago, season two, of like how much hardware and software have to be in sync with each other for this to really like catch fire and really like get developed well within, or I should say operationalized well within companies. Cause it's like, yeah, you could have some really amazing and powerful tools, but if the tool is like a laptop in a field office that is like being used by a superintendent, it's like, yeah, but that's not where they're spending a majority of their day. They should be or could be, out on a job. And yeah, just it's interesting to think, and I'm sure we'll have these conversations, and I know we'll have these conversations with a lot of field folks in this season of like, hey, what were the transformative hardware solutions that came out in your career? Mm-hmm. And hey, what were the like transformative software things that have come out? And I mean, we're definitely in that, you know, season now with all things AI and all things, you know, intelligence and whatnot. But anyway, I'm teasing well, for episodes that'll be.
Yeah, on that note, I had a front row seat to I'll shout out Tracy Young from PlanGrid. She went to Sac State and we participated on the same design build competition team back then, and I had a front row seat to her saying we maxed out our credit cards to buy a bunch of iPads to give to contractors. And that was the birth of PlanGrid. And so, you know, got to watch that sort of meteoric rise to exactly your point. You know, it was just, that was a hardware change. And that was just a vehicle to give, you know, to take a workflow that contractors were already, you know, obviously very entrenched in using drawings and moving that from a plan table in a trailer to the hands of a superintendent out in the field and just the efficiency that was there. Pretty awesome to watch.
It's crazy to think. I remember this is going to date me a little bit, but I remember when the iPad got announced and people being like, it's going to be a big phone. Like, it's just a big iPhone. How are we? And then like the whole construction industry was like, this is amazing. I can like actually multi-touch this thing and not like have to use a stylus. Anyway, it's just funny to think like how hardware really does have to come in at the right. Like, of course, software is a huge component of it too, but I've used this analogy that there's just like this unique dance. Like, one can't get too far, you know, in front of the other, and the other can't get too far behind. And really, when they intersect on their innovation paths, like that's the key, you know, moment of success that to like, hey, take advantage. This is a unique eclipse, I guess, if we want to call it that, of like two things really coming together. Anyway, great things that we're teasing for throughout the season and conversations too. But yeah, I think to that point and kind of going down the technology route, like how have you seen it change? Like, obviously you got to see it on small jobs, bigger jobs, things like that. But like, yeah, maybe allude to that a little bit too, at just kind of your perspective from being from the field, like how much have seen that journey and come along in the time that you were out there.
Yeah. I mean, we've already called out a couple of them, right? BIM being a standard, that's table stakes these days. PlanGrid, iPads moving out to the field. I think to your point, not just PlanGrid, but iPad in general. With nowadays, you have pretty much every tool is built or formatted to, you know, be able to be used on those iPads. And you know, I think the evolution of the safety vest to include the back iPad note pocket on it, right? It's one of those hardware changes in the most simplest sense, but. Yeah, I think just there's an attitude shift as well, I think, from the field, right? We're seeing tools that, you know, Procore, for instance, having everything you need for project management within that platform. That was on my last project we used, we had implemented and started to use Procore there. You know, so the changes, well, I guess maybe the obvious, most obvious change is the number of solutions that are out there, right? You know, back in 2008, you had a handful of Autodesk products that were, and a lot of them are still very standard in what we do. But nowadays, like I saw an old colleague at, I think, Procore Groundbreak last year, and he was still in the construction industry in an innovation role, walking around, looking at everything that was, you know, there to at his fingertips. And I said, man, you know, I kind of don't envy you in this role right now and having to pick a pony and, you know, and try and, you know, implement it and institutionalize it at your organization, because everything's just changing so fast and there are so many solutions out there and so many options that, you know, it poses a big challenge for those folks. So I think just to answer your question, the changes that have come about, I mean, there's a plethora of things that are available to the industry now that, now it's a matter of filtering, you know, sorting through it and trying to standardize on things and really empower the people in the field to use the best tools.
I know this is going to come up many times in the conversations we have had and will have in this season of just like the feed the field mentality. Like, do you feel like that's easier or harder with all the different like options that are out there? Like, I think on one hand, it could be like, oh man, now I have so many things at my fingertips, or, you know, a store essentially to like go through, and kind of this app mentality of like, oh, there's an app for this, an app for that. Like, you feel like the kind of plethora of options enhances feed the field mentality, or like makes it harder, or like is still neutral? Like, what I love the term. I mean, I think that obviously like resonates with a lot of people, and should almost be like a motto for a lot of the folks that are probably listening. I'm like, hey, if it's not helping you feed the field, like I would really start to wonder the, you know, need of the investment behind it. But yeah, just talk about how, like, how crowded it's gotten, and is that helpful or not from your perspective, being in that field kind of role?
Yeah. From my perspective, I think to your point, feed the field. If you understand that phrase, you know, at its core, the intent is to remove as many roadblocks as possible for the operations team on the project so that they can deliver that job as efficiently and successfully as possible. There is a very easy, stumbling block in that by introducing too much stuff, right? If every solution you find on the market is something you want to try and you want to hand it to a project team, that can pretty quickly become a distraction, right? It can become too much. It can become overload. So I think that there is a balance between value and, you know, experimentation, right? If I can use that word loosely, trying to find and vet solutions that are really, really valuable in the context of a field application, I think is the most important thing today with that plethora of options that are out there, with the availability of so many things that, you know, every tech company website you look at, it's the number one in the world. It's the best available in this space. Yeah. It's the X, Y, and Z, right? We do it too. So, you know, really trying to put value on why you're implementing a piece of technology or innovation is the biggest thing. And just stay out of the way of the builders, right? There are a lot of very, very smart, talented superintendents, engineers, QAQC people, safety folks. Like, those people are, you know, working, burning the candle at both ends in a lot of cases to deliver a world-class building. And, you know, that's the way I felt during my years in the field. Is, you know, my number one goal every day is to make sure this project stays on track. And, you know, my job as a superintendent during that period of time was to remove as many roadblocks, remove as many constraints as I could for the people who are actually swinging hammers, right? That's a really important note. In, you know, 13 years at Turner Construction, never swung a hammer once, right? It's the people in the field that are actually building those jobs.
Yeah, totally. It's funny hearing you say some of those things, like just past episodes and conversations like come up so vividly of, you know, hey, like if you're not like developing problem statements and really things that like are identifying the needs here, like that may be a really good sign that it may not be something you need or use. And I guess to that, and maybe I'm again taking a little bit of a right turn, but like, would you from a field perspective, like appreciate the like questions and asking like, hey, like what are your problem statements that you're trying to solve? Or would you almost like prefer kind of said technology role person be like, hey, this is what I'm perceiving your problems or challenges are from the position I'm in. Is this true or not? Like how much of that problem statement, like brainstorming process, do you think the field like wants to be involved with? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's an interesting question. I think, you know, I think the answer to that will vary from person to person. For me personally, you know, I was always kind of the champion persona for the tech solutions that I was interested in. Obviously my introduction to Structured Site and, you know, ultimately leading me to working here was one of those kind of scenarios. But I think that there's definitely a time and place. And one thing that should be stressed, I think, and you know, I think a lot of the people who are potentially listening to this may already understand this, but it's very difficult to change course, right? Once that ship leaves the station or leaves port, that train leaves the station, which is the project starting, right? Once you break ground on a project, it is in the best interest of the field to have the tech stack figured out by that point, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. It's really difficult to insert new technology and new training, changing your processes and workflows midstream. And so I think that there's a really good opportunity for exactly that, where talk to the builders, talk to the field staff, those operations staff, between projects, right? Cool thing about the construction industry is it's very cyclical. We get to go just nose to the grindstone, all in on a project for, you know, 12 to 36 months, roughly, you know, kind of on average, mm-hmm. I would guess. And then you get a chance to reset, right? Once that project's done, you get to go to the new one, and it's the next one, mm-hmm. and it's a clean slate, right? It's this next one's going to be the best project I ever built. That was always the terms. So use that sort of downtime in between,
yeah.
Which across an organization, you're going to have generally a lot of those people, you know, throughout the year moving from job to mm-hmm. job. Pull them in for a few minutes, right? Talk to them and be like, hey, check this out. Is this something that you'd find interesting? While their minds are clear, while they have that sort of lull in the action, when it's peak performance, peak time on the schedule, it's really tough to try and solicit some of that feedback. So,
yeah, you don't want to build a process and a building at the same time, right? Like
no, that's tough.
That very tough, not easy to do. What's challenging in that too, though, is like, I don't know. And we obviously have a lot of folks from the software side listening to this too. And it's hard because I've seen it, having been an end result of a customer and also seeing it on this side a little bit too, of like the, oh, but yeah, like, hey, just, you know, try this, or like a trial or beta test or pilot, I think is the word, like, mm-hmm. you know, and it's hard. We talked about this again in some other episodes in past seasons of like, hey, defining what a pilot process is like, and honestly extending that to like, hey, are pilots something that you are open to doing during a project, or hey, like start it at the beginning? It's just so fascinating because, yeah, I think you said it really well. Like, the best time to do it, obviously, is at the beginning of the job to not overwhelm folks. But I also would like kind of counter too of saying like, hey, there's sometimes that you just need a unique solution in the project that it may work out. Like, and I don't know success rates, right? Like, let's call it 50-50 of like, something being successful halfway through a project versus it being at the beginning. But yeah, like it's funny what innovation comes out of just true need and what innovation yeah. comes out of like really true intentional planning of like, this is our goal. This is what we want to do for the job. And yeah, almost having a balance of both. But obviously to your point, like you don't want to be building those processes like during the job, right?
Right. And I think that to add on to that too, I think that something that I found was very successful during my time and something that I'm sure a lot of other people have figured out already, but my very last project while I was working at Turner was the natural resources building in Sacramento. I was responsible for the entire basic exterior skin of that building. One system that we had as part of the exterior skin was, it really wasn't even a system, real building system when we got to it. It was these really cool rammed earth, like, precast panels, if you will, effectively had to create a building system out of this kind of material that the architect mm-hmm. wanted on that project. One of the major constraints to that was the structural aspect of this. We've got to make sure these panels don't fall off the building. Well, okay, we have to design a frame for that. We have to design a bunch of supplemental steel to get that in and hang them on the building. And one of the things that I found absolutely critical to that was laser scanning of existing supplemental steel that we had installed yep. already, and then a full-blown like BIM coordination effort of exterior skin connections to those pieces of steel that I could then move around on the back of the panels so that when those panels showed up, they hung on the building and we had no issues. Mm-hmm. As a superintendent and slash engineer during that period of time, not wearing the true like innovation VDC cap, I knew that the tools were available to me. I knew that the use case that I was looking for would work with what we had. And it was a matter of me just asking and saying, hey, I have this problem. Can we use these tools to solve it? Mm-hmm. And the answer was yes. We managed to get through it and everything worked out, you know, without a hitch. So the point there is make sure, I guess, as an organization, what you can do is just educate the staff, educate the operations people on what is on deck, like what do we have, what's in the toolbox, and then empower them to think outside of the normal sort of quote-unquote way we've always done it. And hey, maybe that, you know, that tool that we had that I heard about at the last quarterly business meeting from some other superintendent or another innovation guy, maybe that works in this scenario. Let me make that phone call. Right. And so just having that sort of mentality on a job site is super helpful in these in these conversations.
Yeah, well said. I mean, again, just these episodes and conversations keep coming to mind. Like, there was a guest we had on, I think two seasons ago, that was like, hey, my desire to create almost like a Yelp or a reviewed like doc of like, hey, here's all the tools at our disposal. Here's the use cases. Here's where like they had value. Here's where we like tried them that didn't fit into its use case. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, maybe it's not as much more about like, hey, defining the process as you go, but like, hey, really defining the tools you have at your disposal at the beginning of this thing, so that when those times present itself, hey, you're not basically doing the searching for the tool. You're more doing the right, like searching for application of it in its best capacity of like, hey, we know this is in the wheelhouse of what this intended use of this tool is. We're going to use the hammer for the hammer. We're going to use the screwdriver for the screwdriver. But
yeah,
at the end of the day, like, you got to make sure that you know what tools are in that toolbox. And that is, I think, where this kind of blend of like field and office do have to like come together and be like, hey, like, let's constantly evaluate our toolbox. Like, what are the things that are working? What are not? Do we have two tools that are doing the same thing that ultimately like is just causing it to be more challenging? Or is there optimization in a tool? Like, that's where I think at end of jobs, like, that's the super exciting part, is like almost like a retro of the project, you know, mm-hmm. technology stack, if you call it that. And, you know, I don't know how that maybe is phrased, but.
I mean, at that point, in fact, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day. It's like, we don't really do the term retro was new to me coming to the tech side of things, you know, like you too, probably from your experience. And, you know, after being part of the product org here for a little while, and like, you know, we plan something, we build some stuff, and then we retro and we figure out what we do well, what we not do well. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen in the construction industry as much as I, at least from my perspective, like, it never really happened at the end of a job where we pulled all the people who worked on that job back into a room for 2-3 hours and said, what do we screw up? What do we do really well? What do you want to do differently next time? Right. And that could be applied not just to the tech stack side of things, but even just the process of building relationships with owners and engineers, architects. You know, how can we make this industry better by having those retros?
Why is that though? Like, is that a culture thing? Is that a timing thing? I mean, because you hear about project teams that are like, hey, I'm taking 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks off after this job because we just like sprinted over the finish line. Like what?
I think it's a timing thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's timing. I mean, you know, the peak. You know, if you look at your manpower, your cash flow, all those curves, right? When they peak. And then they, you know, you run them out till the end of the job, and then they start to taper off. During that taper period is when, you know, GCs are trying to pull staff, right? It's like, Adam, you're off this job now. You're going to go start the next one. Grant, you're off this job a month later. You're going to go start that next one. And so we tend to then splinter the team towards the end as that job starts to taper down. You know, and then, you know, then the age old question of like, when is the project actually finished, right? Is it when is it when like the punch list is complete? Is it when you actually turn over the building to the owner? Is it when you get final payment? Is it, you know, like, when is it done? So when is that sort of line to bring all those people who have you've now split off to the other jobs? Yeah. When do you bring them back into a room? And so I think that's probably the biggest hurdle.
I mean, in your opinion, like, what is the most effective catalyst to change that? Is that like the innovation person's role or the tech person's role? Is it the like field team being vocal about, hey guys, like, I don't want to ever see that thing again? Like, obviously the answer is both, right? But like, someone has to initiate it. Like, is there, from your opinion, is there one over the other?
I guess, yeah, I hadn't really thought about it. My opinion would be it's probably in the best interest of the business as a whole. And so it's probably a function of that kind of executive leadership. You know, I would say that, you know, you have a PX that either oversees a massive job or multiple smaller jobs. You know, I would even put on that person's plate that sort of retro, right? Lead the retro at the end of the job. You know, because so much of what we learn during a construction project could benefit, you know, the way that we practice scheduling at a corporate level, the way that we practice pre-construction estimating at a corporate level, right? So many of the findings of the job should be fed back to those auxiliary functions, so that, again, in the interest of feeding the field in the future, if we can disseminate our learnings, we set ourselves up for success, you know, even better on the next job.
I think we just found some questions that we're for sure going to put in front of people
for sure. Yeah. I like those.
Yeah. I mean, it is tricky, right? It's so easy to point the finger. It's so easy to be like, oh, well, that's their responsibility, right? Or that's, you know, another team or department, but it really is. And that's why I kind of almost asked at a like cultural level, right? Like everyone is obviously keen to get feedback and, you know, there's parts of review cycles, promotions, all that, but like, yeah, at the same time, like, you know, these projects, gosh, such a big miss is when you just go to the next one and you, yep, you don't either implement, and you know that, right? Like, that's just so tricky about this is that, and hopefully, I mean, selfishly, that's what we're trying to elevate here, right? Like, that's what we're trying to do, mm-hmm, is, you know, share stories of when that's worked and maybe share some horror stories of when it hasn't. And you kind of see that happen, mm-hmm, again and again on other jobs. But yeah, it's interesting, man. Great thoughts to like questions I'm sure we are going to ask some folks.
I think a good example too is, you know, just to, I guess maybe one time in this episode, just tie it back to kind of what we do now is, you know, my experience before that last project, the natural resources job, I came off of a healthcare, we built a new wing to a hospital in Oakland, was the superintendent on that project. And that was when I was approached by the very first wave, the beginning of these platforms that were utilizing these 360 cameras. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Philip Lorenzo, co-founder of Obstruction Site, knocked on my trailer door and just said, hey man, I'm going to give you this camera, go take pictures. And I, you know, it was sort of a little bit of apprehensive. I caught myself in my own sort of, this is the way we've always done it ways. It's like, now I got to carve out extra time to go take pictures, but I'll give it a shot, right? Being sort of that more forward thinking mm-hmm. person, went and did it, started to find myself and my team looking at those photos pretty often, leveraging mm-hmm. the content that we had generated on the project over the course of, you know, that period of time. And then by the time I finished that project and moved to the natural resources job, I spoke to the PM on that project and said, hey, you need to carve out money because I'm buying five of those cameras and we're going to mm-hmm. buy Obstruction Site because we have to have that on this next job. Mm-hmm. And from that, you know, fast forward the next 3.5 years on that job, I now talk to people who I was on that project with who are on their next jobs, and they've brought Obstruction Site with them to the next job because they saw the value that I saw. And so mm-hmm. I think just getting the ball rolling, right? It's that snowball effect of exposing people to new tech, finding value, implementation on the next job, right? And so that's how we kind of further the industry as a whole, just through positive use cases.
Yeah, and it's funny even hearing you like explain that. I go back to like what we were talking about earlier of like this intersection of hardware and software. Like, obviously, people were trying to stitch together 360 photos from individual photos. And I think there was mm-hmm. a tool called like Photosphere or Photosynthesis like that, like tried to do that. But like this period that we're in, I would say the line of hardware and software are so close to each other. They're obviously not on top of each other. One's always going to kind of excel more than the other. But we are in an extended season that hardware and software are very much in tune with each other that, mm-hmm. man, I hate the kind of folks that are getting left behind in it of just like, hey, don't let your missed opportunities of doing retros and asking your team like what could have been helpful or what worked or didn't work, like prevent you from getting the value out of these very simple like tools, very simple. Like we're not talking, you know, schedule altering, you know, processes right. of technology. Like, hey, these are enhancing the things that you're doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the season of hardware and software being as close as they are, I think just bodes well for a lot of folks that really their relationship with technology, maybe that's what I'm like kind of trying to get to is like, hey, this is a really exciting season. And obviously you can get incredibly overwhelmed with all the software out there. Obviously there's a ton of hardware as well, maybe not as many, but yeah, it's just interesting. It's interesting to kind of think of it in that sense of like, when you talk about the groundswell and just kind of the momentum that's behind it, it's like, that's hand to hand, right? Or that's eye to eye. That's yeah. like trailer to trailer. Like you're going yep. around and saying like, hey, take these lessons that I learned on this job. Don't make these same mistakes, do these things different. And then that job gets, you know, a 1.5x improvement of the things that you just learned on the last one.
For sure. Yeah. It's an awesome perspective, awesome viewpoint on it. And I think I'm going to confuse a lot of listeners this season with my my pick the side of the line, Adam. Are you an innovation guy? Or are you a superintendent? What are you, right? And I'm going to follow that with, there's also the mentality that I think I would caution a lot of people on. And it's like, there's always that, if it ain't broke, don't fix it too, right? Mm-hmm. Implementing something for the sake of implementing something isn't always that valuable, right? Yeah, you could force your way to a win in the long term, but like, sometimes you just got to let it happen too, right? And so, mm-hmm. You know, there are staple processes and staple things that I have to do as a superintendent or an engineer or project manager that are just inherent to the building process. Those things have to get done every day. And yeah, maybe today isn't the right day for me to try something new. You know, for the innovation folks, don't take that as a loss. Just take it as a, let's try it tomorrow. Right. And, yeah, you know, find the right time to put that in place or to experiment.
Yeah, I feel like a indirect theme of this like just conversation, hearing your thoughts, is it's like how important and critical timing is and what you can control in it and what you can't. And don't like lose heart in the ways that you can't control it, but man, fully take advantage when you can. And that's just something that obviously like your background and story shows and alludes a lot to. So Adam, this has been super fun. We're going to have a ton of fun this season. I can already envision the conversations and hot takes and questions and folks for folks, but anything you'd want to leave folks with of just some excitement that you're thinking about and the conversations we're going to have with some field folks this season?
No, man, I don't think so. Nothing too overwhelming. I think maybe the only thought is that, you know, I'm real excited to be part of this now. Again, having watched a lot of the last few seasons, you know, the emphasis for me being co-host or one of the co-hosts on this season too has just been how outspoken and loud I've been internally. You know, maybe a little look behind the curtain for everybody is that I've been barking to product and marketing and everybody internally, like, hey, we need to be talking to more of the field users. And so I guess I got what I asked for, and they said, cool, now you're the face of this with Grant. So
come on, yeah, let's do it.
I'm excited to get the boots dirty, go out on job sites, talk to the people who are actually building the buildings and listen to them and figure out what it is that they want, what it is we can do better for them.
Natalie, my brother. Yeah, totally. It's super fun. I think just to think through a lot of these things, and yeah, we just hope that you guys as the listeners are encouraged by what we're, you know, wanting to put in front of you. And ultimately like that there's takeaways, there's like tangible things that you hear in this that you're like, oh man, I really think that that could be something that I can go back to my team or our field staff and really share with them. I mean, Adam and I are not here to just enjoy a good conversation. We are here to put really smart people and really, I think, great lessons learned as a part of their journey in front of you guys, just to be able to enhance the things that you're doing. So, Adam, this is going to be fun, man. I'm really excited for the upcoming season. And one, just appreciate you sharing your story, man. It's encouraging. I've always neglected to appreciate enough of how much experience we have in this space of construction on our team here at Dronopoy. And man, it is going to definitely show itself, not only in the conversations that we're going to have, but hopefully the improvements we're making in the product. So appreciate your time, man. It's going to be a good time. And also just appreciate you guys listening in. Be on the lookout for all the Built Different downloads, the things that we've been doing to recap these episodes, and some other really fun things that we're going to be putting in also throughout the season, which is kind of a site visit initiative and some things that we hope to kind of further show, like, hey, conversations don't just happen in these vacuums. We got to get out and get our boots dirty and hear from the folks in the field too of what they're seeing value in. So some fun stuff on the horizon with that too. But Adam, really appreciate it, man. Excited to have you on, and look forward to seeing you more and having you on throughout the season.
Sounds great. Thanks, man.
Awesome. Well, take care, team. We will see you on the next one and see you soon.
Make sure to subscribe to Built Different on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Let's build this community together.